remembering who we are. That is at this time, from 12 to 12:45 Eastern Time. The purpose of that program is to get in touch with the deepest self, who we truly are, which is the soul, separate from the mind, the body, the ego that thinks we are the mind and the body. So we come together every week for that purpose, and we've been doing that since 2020, the beginning of the pandemic. And each year we have now been honored to have an anniversary special with Satchinandana Swami as our special guest to guide us closer to really realizing how we are the soul and living in that alignment. So the intention for this series in particular is for him to be able to share, as a monk for more than 50 years and a practitioner on the spiritual path, his own experiences of the spiritual reality, things which have struck him and left a deep impression that he carries with him, and it is a wealth that he is so kindly sharing with us. So we're very, very honored to have Satchinandana Swami, who travels around the world teaching and has written many books. He leads kirtan, or musical meditation, that's so beautiful. And we want you to come and experience it in person with us in New York in a few weeks. We have a program with him, so please make your travel arrangements for that as well. And the format for this program is that we'll go until 1 p.m. Eastern officially. Satchinandana Swami will tell us a story and bring us into the ad. And then we'll have a little time for Q&A, and then we'll officially break. And for those of you who are inspired to stay on, please do. We have Satchinandana Swami for an extra half an hour, which is a great privilege. So do take advantage as you're able. And send your questions in direct message to Michael. So Michael will be fielding all of your questions. And you can compose them as Satchinandana Swami is speaking. And then we'll have opportunity to call select people. We'll call on you at that time. So we have a culture that helps to make these experiences as lastingly impactful as possible. So we ask for three pillars of that culture from all of us. That is respect. We want to create a safe and sacred space together. Your full-hearted participation, that you're completely present, that you give your undivided attention. And the best is if you can have your video on, that really goes a long way. It also allows us to be together and see each other as a community, which is very beautiful. So please be full-hearted in your participation here, and your determination that we don't want to walk out of today with this wealth and then squander it. We want to actually make the intention that I know I forget so much of what I hear. I know I don't act on so much that would be good for me to act on. Let's change that dynamic. Let's be determined. Let's set the intention now that I want to really hold dear whatever it is that I receive today. So are we all on board for the culture? Thank you very much. Without further ado, we have Satchinandana Swami.
First of all, I would like to welcome all of you affectionately to this episode of our series. I really feel that if someone speaks of his spiritual experiences, that this can impact us and inspire us, perhaps, to see what we can do to attract spiritual experiences in our own lives. Ultimately, it are these experiences that strengthen our faith, that there really is a spiritual dimension that is a fundament of this life. I always say that although spiritual things tend to be invisible, like for instance the life force, love, the soul and God, these are invisible, but they are the basis of our life, almost like the oxygen in the air is an invisible factor, but without it we would not be able to continue our life. We would choke up and suffocate. So because these spiritual things are not visible to the material eye, therefore when we hear of experiences where people actually realized the spiritual elements in their life, where they realized the soul, where they realized God, where they had actual proof that there is a spiritual dimension. These type of experiences can be powerful faith builders in us. And if not that, they can at least give us an impetus to also try for our own spiritual experiences. So today, I would like to share with you the experience of meeting a genuine spiritual teacher. I would like to share with you what exactly transpired when I met my spiritual master and decided actually for a life of spiritual culture. Our host has said that I'm a 50-year-old, or let us say that since 50 years I'm pursuing the path of monkhood. To be quite precise, it's 51 years I counted today. What gave an individual the strength to swim so long against the current of the world? We can ask the question. And my dear everyone, it are the spiritual experiences which have given me the strength to pursue this path, which is a path that is less trodden, you know, that is less walked in this world. And these spiritual experiences, they have supplied me with the inner strength and conviction and joy also to dance on the head of illusion. This is how monks would speak about material living. Let me see here. I met my spiritual master when I was only 16 years old, just on the cross, on the threshold of becoming 17. I had read books like the Bhagavad Gita, and I had always as a young boy been interested in these border areas where psychology stops to give good explanations, and where you require the spiritual knowledge to make sense of what has happened to you. I was interested in out-of-body experiences, which happened both in hospitals as well as in heavy accidents. These type of experiences where people dislodged from the body and the mind and saw themselves from out of the body. I was quite interested and therefore open, but I had not committed to any spiritual path and of course not to any particular spiritual teacher. Because I had read the Bhagavad Gita, And I came to a crossroad in my life where I had to decide either I go for an education of a CEO or I become something else. I said to myself, let me meet a genuine spiritual master. Let me see what he communicates verbally to me, but much more, let me see how I'm affected by such a meeting, what it does to me. And I remember I was in high school at that time, so I told the head teacher that I will take now a leave of absence, and I need to go to London and sit next to a genuine spiritual master. The head teacher was interested. Who is this? Yes, it is the one who brought the ancient Vedic knowledge from India to the West. I have heard. He's the spiritual master of the Beatles. I said, I don't know that, but yes, George Harrison, the famous Beatle, is following him. But I'm not going because of that. I want to see how he is. And he said, well, why don't you make it simple for us? Just tell you're sick. We don't have this on our rules that our students can go for spiritual interviews to a foreign country. So I went to London. I was quite romantic at that time. I thought, this is the ultimate spiritual quest, the ultimate adventure of humanity, that a searcher goes to a teacher. Let me go for free. And I hid in the bellows of a ship. We left in Hamburg Harbor. And I somehow managed to get on board like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. I had some idea of Mark Twain's Little Heroes, who escaped the bourgeoisie living and went for a life of exploration and adventure. So I also, although I had, I come from an affluent family. I just went for free inside the ship, and I was hiding. It was quite adventurous because I thought this is the ultimate spiritual adventure to meet the teacher. At that time, I didn't know how much the sacred traditions value this meeting between a searcher and a spiritually accomplished person. There are statements in the scriptures which I want to read for you so that you know just how important this is, seen this meeting. For instance, here is one from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I will sing it to you so that you get the idea of the tradition. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach Tate Krishna Bhaje Kore Guru Rasevana Maya Jala Chute Paya Krishna Racharana. I hope you enjoyed. This is a Bengali language from the 15th century. The living entity wanders throughout the universe, from one body to the next. He gives up one body at the time of death, and then, by the force of nature, is carried to his next body and continues another life. When by the mercy of God one meets a bona fide spiritual master, at that time one gets from him the seed of bhakti in the heart. If one then becomes a spiritual gardener and cultivates that seed in the heart, it will develop into a plant which will reach the lotus feet of Krishna. Summary, Krishna or God sends you the spiritual master, and the spiritual master brings you in contact with God. That's how important this meeting is seen. There's another statement from the Vedanta Sara, which I found quite relevant for this discussion. My title for what I will tell you is A Head Full of Fire, or A Head on Fire. It says, just as a person whose head is on fire runs towards the water, in the same way, one who's burning from the fire of material existence must run to a guru for relief. So here's the ancient understanding that birth in this world, death in this world, the miseries of old age and the miseries of disease are like a fire. They burn us away. And one must run to a spiritual master for relief, because he can extinguish that fire of misery, that fire of suffering, that fire of restlessness, that fire of dissatisfaction, and so on. I had not read these ancient texts when I went to London as a free passenger in a passenger ship. I just was at the crossroad in my life where I needed to see, will I decide to involve myself entirely into my material career, or will I look for a spiritual alternative? So this was my mood. I had read some of Srila Prabhupada's books, not entire books but excerpts, and I wanted to now test the author. I remember he was going, we had one date where he would come, but somehow he was held up in America. There were a few very big events that had developed, so he came late. He came when my summer holidays had already been finished. I left 1 week before the summer holidays. The school gave me sick leave. And I had said I would be back after the summer holidays. But because my Srila Prabhupada, this is how I will refer to him, had not yet arrived, I felt I needed to extend my stay. During that time, many of my friends came and said, you are already for 6 weeks, that's how long the summer holidays are. You know, you are already for 6 weeks in London. Will you come back? I said, I don't know. I'm making it dependent on my meeting with my spiritual master and what I will experience at that time. I remember there was a news from my grandfather. My grandfather was dying. And he wanted to see me one more time before he would leave his body. And you must know, my grandfather was the main intellectual influence in my early life. He really knew everything. I would wish you to meet my grandfather. He was from Sweden, a very charismatic person and really so well read, and he had trained me. I was never so interested in the school because everything went so slow. But my grandfather trained me, taught me many, many things. And he now knew I was staying in the ashram in London. And he said, please come, I'm dying. I need to see you one more time. I knew my grandfather. He wanted to ask me to not take spiritual life too serious, but to pursue a material life and just meditate and read and live a spiritually minded life on the side, but not as my main focus. And because he knew I was a very dynamic person, sometimes a little bit an either or, I could only do things 100%, so he was fearing that I would become a monk already. Grandfather knew. He was a mystic also. He was everything. So I had to tell him, Grandfather, I know that on your deathbed you have your ultimate weapon in your hand. You will ask me something. You will most probably ask me to take up material life. But I can't, and then when I'm before you, I cannot deny your request. It's not done in our family that you deny a dying person a request. When a dying person who's close to you asks you for something, you have got to do it. You have to do it. You can't say no. And I said, my dear grandfather, this is so important for me, this decision, this meeting is so important for me that please allow me. I will not come to you now, but when you are, but please know I always hold your teachings to me close to my heart, and I will not disappoint you in my life, whatever my life will be like. It was very difficult for me to say no to my grandfather because I knew his love for me, and I loved him also very dearly. But he would ask me, and I knew this, to not, never ever become a monk, but to pursue the family line and you know, do something in this world, in the professional field. So anyways, Prabhupada was late, so to say, according to the earlier date he had given. And I had put everything I had into this meeting. I had even denied the request of my dying grandfather, which was very, very difficult and hard for me. I was highly invested in this meeting. I came to the Heathrow Airport with many other devotees, but again the flight was delayed and we waited until midnight. Many of the devotees or the other monks were sleeping by now on the relaxing chairs in the airport, but I was there on fire for this meeting. As I looked towards the frosted door through which he would come, I began to see a light on the other side of the frosted door, which seemed to move. I was not disquieted or disturbed because airport means bright lights. But I wondered, what is this wandering light doing? Then from time to time, the frosted doors would open and one passenger or a group of passengers who had just arrived would come and go into the airport hall. And then the frosted doors closed. And whenever they closed, I saw again this light. Then I saw it coming closer. The frosted door slided open, and I saw Srila Prabhupada, and his head was on fire. I can only say it like I saw it at that time. Now I know that in all spiritual traditions, genuine saints usually are depicted with a halo, huh? Some circle of light around the head. But when I saw him, I didn't know so what I know now, I saw a man who had a head like a sun. There was so much light, and it was coming into the airport hall, and everyone took notice, especially me. Now, I come from a post-war generation, and I thought, wow, this could be dangerous. It could be like an atom bomb or something, a weapon. More to protect my eyesight than to give respect, I threw myself from head to toe on the ground, much like a German soldier will jump into a ditch when the bombs of the Allied forces exploded. So I was lying now with my head, my nose, so to say, on the ground, waiting for him to pass me. I counted to 120. That is 2 minutes, I thought. And then I added 2 extra minutes just to be sure. I remember myself counting there so that the source of possible danger would pass. Now you see, it gives me a laugh, but at that time I was very tense about everything. I was very, very, how do you say, an inner turmoil, because I knew my life would be dependent on that meeting, or the course of my life, which I would take. So finally I dared to come out of my protective position, and I remember the first thing I saw when I looked up were a pair of house shoes. I still remember the brand, Romica house shoes. They are leisure shoes, you know. In Yugoslavian language you would say papushkas. I think you get the idea, just very comfortable shoes. And my first reaction was, who in the world has the nerve to go on an international flight in these house shoes? How do we call house shoes?
Indoor house shoes.
Indoor house shoes, says Gaur Krishna. You know what I mean. These super comfortable shoes which you only wear in the house when you have maybe a gown over you just before you go to bed. Who in the world? And then I looked up and I saw the saffron colored garments of a monk, and I became shocked. I looked up more and I looked into the smiling face of Srila Prabhupada. He was clearly amused, but then his expression changed. He looked very grave towards me, and his eyes seemed to say, "Welcome back." At least that is what I heard. I think we all know eyes can speak. Some person can look very angry at us, and we get the message. He's communicating, get out of here, get lost, or something. But here
he looked at me, and his eye language seemed to say, "Welcome back." My dear everyone, this is about spiritual experience, and spiritual experiences tend to be subjective. In other words, only the person who makes the experience makes such an experience, which is valid for him and which is life-changing for him, which sends him sometimes on a different path. At that moment, which is something which I would call now as transrational, it supersedes the ratio. It was clear to me, without words, that here was a person from a spiritual country or spiritual dimension or spiritual realm, if you so want, a citizen of another world, and he had just opened for me the door into this world. At this moment, as I looked to Srila Prabhupada, I didn't see his eyes, his head, his dress. I even forgot about his indoor house shoes. What I saw was a whole spiritual realm. I saw pilgrims going to Mother Ganga and paying their obeisances, then entering the flow of the sacred river, doing their offerings. I saw temples opening their gates to those who wanted to enter the mystery of darshan, that is, seeing the Lord on the altar and being seen to him. I had a million of other impressions, as numerous as the waves, so to say, on a river entering me. And all this through one glance only, one glance of an enlightened soul. And I felt invited to explore this dimension which had come with him, this world, the sacred world which had come with him. I felt not only invited, but I felt empowered, if you so want, or facilitated, or I felt I had been given the permission and the strength and to enter this world. A door had been opened, a door whose handle is not outside for you to open, but a door whose handle is on the other side, and the personality who lives there on the other side had opened the door and pushed it open for me. I felt that. But of course, my rationality, my rational brain was asking itself afterwards, what was that? Prabhupada continued to walk. There was a kirtan that happened at that time. The devotees of London greeted him by playing their instruments and singing their sacred songs, the Maha Mantra. And Prabhupada gave every day then lectures in the temple. As I said to you, my rational mind was just overwhelmed or bypassed, if you so wanted. It protested. It said, come on, just test him. The disciple should test the spiritual master. Don't just act on one glance and change your life. What? How will you explain it to your parents, to your friends? How will you explain this to your grandfather who might have died by now, but how would you explain it before him, so to say? So I did ask Srila Prabhupada, I stayed in the temple for a week, and I asked him a challenging question. The question was, you say that God is all good, and you also say that God is the creator of this world. But then, why is there so much evil in this world? This only can mean that the creator is also evil. He's not all good. He either is not all good, or he is not all powerful to create a world. One of the two. If you say God is good and he's creating everything, then how do you account for evil and save the good face of your God? So I rehearsed the lines. I did not want to melt down before such a great personality, and my English was even worse than it is now. So I had really written it down, taken the dictionary for the difficult words, and just learned my lines. And Prabhupada, when I had finished, he looked at me. And I really could not decipher this, his glance. It was a mixture of, why does this young boy attack me so heavy? And compassion. So he answered in only one sentence. He said, not God has created this world. You have created this world. You have created your world. You have created all the mistakes in it. And when I heard his answer, my critical mind was not satisfied. I thought, that's not an answer, please, to my query. But he went on to the next question. I thought for a long time about this answer. And somehow, like in a Buddhistic koan where you are asked to meditate about one hand clapping, an impossibility in other words, but get insights in the process of thinking about it, I also got very deep insights into my life. I understood, for instance, things like the government doesn't want to create a prison. But because they are criminals who are dangerous for themselves and for the whole world, they create for the prisoner the prison. And in this way, the prisoner has created the prison. I understood things that I cannot shift the responsibility for my life and my mistakes on God. He gives me a freedom to act, and I have to carry the responsibility. I have to be responsible for my actions. I understood many, many things just by this one sentence. And again, that was a transrational moment. It was a spiritual experience. My dear everyone, if you can understand with your mind the spiritual world, then what you understand is not the spiritual world. It is beyond your ant-like mind. The ant cannot understand a computer. When an ant understands something, it cannot be a computer. It is the capability is not there. So I was, but everything started on this first meeting, the wandering light which emanated from his head and his glance, and the light that quenched the light of my material existence. Years later, at 9/11, it was the 9th of September, but 1973. There is a 9/11 before the terrible happening in New York. It was the 9th of September, where Srila Prabhupada spoke in the University of Uppsala about the meeting of a person with a spiritual master. He said, Dhavanala means forest fire. You have got an experience of a forest fire. You might have seen it. In the forest, nobody goes to set fire, but it takes place. Similarly, within this material world, nobody wants to be unhappy. Everyone is trying to be very happy, but he is forced to accept unhappiness. We have this in countries like Croatia, where it gets very hot in the summertime. Sometimes square miles of good forest are, you know, burned. And there is no one who set the fire. It just happens perhaps by the sun, you know, falling onto a splinter, a glass splinter, and then the, you know, maybe some people have left a glass bottle there, or a glass bottle has broken, or something. There are many things, sometimes by the friction of some trees who are moved by the wind. No one goes there to set fire, but these fires happen, and they burn and burn and burn. Similarly, in this material world, everyone is trying, even at the present moment, to be happy. And then he gives an example. When the First World War was finished, nations formed the United Nations and the League of Nations. They were meant to arrange for peaceful living between the nations. But then there was again a forest fire. Nobody wanted war, but there was a Second World War again. And again they were trying to make United Nations, but there was again war. Vietnam War, Pakistan War, and many other wars. He continues. In the history of Europe, there were so many wars: Carthaginian War, Greece War, Roman War, 7 Years War between France and England. I know of 100 Years War between France and England, and so on. This is called Dhavanala, forest fire. Nobody goes to set fire, but automatically, by the friction of dried bamboo, there's electricity and it catches fire. Similarly, although we do not want unhappiness, still by our dealings we create enemies and friends, and there are fights and there is war. This will continue. So guru means, spiritual master means, who can deliver one from this constant forest fire of misery. This is what you should be able to feel when you have a genuine contact with the spiritual master. That the fire in your life gets quelled down or subdued. The fire of constant anxiety, misery, misunderstandings, etc. And I must say, when I met my spiritual master, and as I'm his student now, I'm every day reading in his literature, I'm trying to understand his teachings, putting them into my life, I feel I'm protected from the miseries of material existence. And it all happened when I met the man with the head on fire in the London airport, as he was visible behind the frosted glass of these sliding doors, and so on. In concluding this session, I would like to guide you into a little a meditation, because I guess that most of the people here on this call have had some contact with a spiritual teacher. It could be people who give seminars and who have enlightened you during a seminar, and you have learned from them during the seminar important life lessons. It could have been people who talked something to you, said something to you that made so much sense that it changed the course of your life. It could have been your spouse, your partner. It does not always, a spiritual teacher does not always come as an ordained monk in a spiritual tradition, or an abbey, or a roshi, or a... it is said that it is ultimately the Lord who manifests in an unlimited amount of persons through whom spiritual instructions come in our life. So in the little meditation which we will do, I will guide you to make a contact with such a spiritual teacher and become mindful of an important instruction which he might have given to you, something that changed your life for the better. And I believe it will be very useful for you, so that you can also have a little taste of a type of spiritual experience that comes when you have a teacher. I will turn to Hari Prasad now for the technicalities of this. I have this little ragini. Can you please say, is it loud enough, or should it, the volume go lower, or
perfect?
Okay, good. I see Edward and Sonia. I see Bal Krishna, Chita Malini, Vipin, Goyal, and I saw earlier our Tzipi, Michael, I see, Rasanat. Oh, so many of you, Narodam Das, Anand Goyal, and Casey. Nice to see you. I will stop looking at images now, but maybe to really guarantee, yes, we can do like this. Okay.
This will be a guided meditation. I request you to take an upright sitting position. You can sit on your chair. That is all right. And when you're ready, please close your eyes. Let us start with a few deep and relaxed breaths. Do not force your breath. Just observe your breath. When you are inhaling, stay with the ingoing breath. And as you are exhaling, stay with the outgoing breath. In and out. Conscious breath. As you breathe in, tell yourself slow. And whenever you breathe out, tell yourself deep. Please continue for a few more breaths, slow and deep breathing. Whenever you breathe out, relax your body. And on each exhale, relax even more. Now, bring before your inner eye a situation where you met someone who had an important message for you, an important teaching, a teaching that brought forth an important understanding. Who was that person? And what was the situation? Have you have an image? Fine. If you don't yet have an image, continue to breathe and just ask yourself again the question: whom did I meet that had an important understanding for me? And what was the situation? Recall this teaching, recall the situation, and stay with it while you continue your relaxed breathing. I will soon get back to you.
with further guidelines. Very good. Now, to conclude this exercise, I request you to express your gratitude in your mind by thinking that teacher, in whatever form he came and spoke to you, for the teaching you have received from him. Please start now to express your gratitude. It is time to slowly come out of this meditation or this exercise, if you so want. Let us do a few deep inhales and exhales. Perhaps we rub our hands, bring them to our eyes as in palming, and just look around in the room. I hope it was useful for you. To relive another spiritual experience for you, your own spiritual experience, I wanted to say, by connecting with a teacher who gives us spiritual teachings. It may not always come as colorful or as how would I call my meeting? It was almost dramatic, I would say. But whatever spiritual instructions we can get, it's very valuable. The Chanakya Pandit is saying, we cannot repay even one word of enlightenment with all the gold in the world. We cannot repay that. It is something very rare, very precious. Good, so let me look secretly at the watch here. Yes, we are in good time. I thank you very much for participating in this session organized by the Upbuild leaders. I was very happy to be with you. I think you can see it because I was able to relive these precious moments where I met my spiritual master, and I could retrace the steps back which brought me to where I am now, to that moment of welcome back. Fine, so Hari Prasad, I will give over to you now. Please guide us what we will do next.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami, and thanks to everyone for being here. We're about to transition into the Q&A. Just a moment before we let those of you who need to leave go. So we will have two more episodes of the Spiritual Experiences of a lifelong monk with Sachinanda Swami. So next week and the week after, same time, everything the same, except the last episode will be exclusively Q&A. So please consider your questions, and you can start to compile them. We're grateful to have an audience around the world, and for Sachinanda Swami joining us from Germany. Please also invite anybody that could benefit from this time. We really want to offer that gift to as many people as we can. So please do consider who you could bring into this sacred space. And I am feeling a lot of gratitude for this experience myself. And I also just want to encourage you again to come in the earth. We are just a few weeks away from May 24th. It's a Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. when Sachinanda Swami will be present in New York City physically. And we cannot wait to build community with him called Cultivating the Inner Life.
Wow.
So join us for Cultivating the Inner Life, and we will go deeper together in that forum. We also have a link for you to sign up and to also share with those who would like to join as well. So I've just placed that in the chat. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll let you go and see you next week. And please stay on if you can for Q&A. Wonderful. So we move now. And I wanted to also just acknowledge a couple of things. So first of all, I was very, very struck by your telling of the story of meeting Srila Prabhupada, which, again, I'm familiar with. Sachinanda Swami is my guru, and so I love to study his life, and secretly this is something I'm treasuring and wanted to share with others, not to just keep it selfishly for myself, but his spiritual experiences are so rich. I really wanted to offer that to everybody and anybody. And so I'm familiar with this, but those details that you shared, once again, are so precious. And I'm thinking about you're hiding away in the ship for an adventure, which I did not know. And so many of the psychological, the mood, the psychological experience just came to life for me in a different way, and it's very moving. I was also reminded of something that was shared by a similar encounter with Srila Prabhupada at an airport, where a janitor saw him, and the janitor was so struck by this head on fire, as you described it, that the janitor started shouting at everybody in the airport, "Look at that man, he's shining! Look at that man, he's shining!" And then he couldn't believe his own eyes. Is there really such a person? You mentioned that if it's objective experience, but it's also unbelievable how somebody who was not looking to meet their guru could also experience something of that. So there's, something also available for anybody. And I think that's noteworthy. What is our consciousness to receive? Very good. So we'll get started with questions. And the first question is from Casey. Will you please ask your question?
Yes, thank you so much for these classes. I actually have two questions. So my first question is, how this and the other spiritual experiences you've had, how they've changed how you live and how you practice. And then my second question is, how do you understand how you got to have these experiences? So I've been wondering if it's like our determination, or if it's grace, or a combination of both, or something else.
Yeah. In answer to your first question, how have these experiences changed me or impacted me? Uh, I must answer this question by telling you what is my basic approach to spiritual life. I am not so much interested in spiritual teachings as I am in spiritual experiences. I feel always that the proof of something is not the description of it or the logical convincing arguments that there is such a thing, but I, for me, the only proof of something is the experience of it. And I have become a monk not because I was convinced theologically or philosophically, but because my experiences of the spiritual reality have shown me that there is something in existence out there which is fundamental to the human experience. Different from, I've spoken with many monks, and I differ really. That's why I never took up an intellectual career, but I followed the path of the mystics, if you so wish, who also believe only in experiences, not in theories about something. Now, to experience something of the sensual world is not difficult. You can make a journey to Alaska, and then you can experience the snowstorms and the ice masses and the polar bears and the grizzly bears and so on. But to make an experience of something that is beyond our sensual perceptions, that lies also beyond what our minds can think of, that is something that needs a spiritual methodology, a spiritual process. Therefore, together with the desire to make an experience, and here I will answer your second question, comes the conviction and dedication to a spiritual practice which facilitates these type of experiences. You have asked in your second part of your you have asked what do you think made you have these experiences, and I really can answer this question only, I think it is by my spiritual practices, which have made me more subtle, made me more sensitive, made me more capable for these spiritual experiences. It has opened eyes or spiritual facilities that are much stronger, for instance, than the intuition. You can widen the intuition, your inner seeing also by techniques like remote viewing. You can learn different techniques like Traktaka techniques, where your mind becomes very sharp and can really pierce through difficult layers that cover the spiritual reality. But these spiritual practices have helped me to go much further than my sensual, my senses can bring me. But really, Casey, the last bit of the way is always happening through grace. I feel it's a little bit like this. Never hesitate to go all the way, because the truth anyways lies beyond it. But what will happen is, when you are ready to go as far as you can, I never figured this out. Let me try to do it with a hand. Yes, like this, I go this far with my spiritual practice. But then, oops, I'm sorry, you have to go think in a mirror way. Then the Lord comes and sees, oh, he is really, or she is really very eager. He or she has gone to the border of his own spiritual capacities. Now let me come and take him the rest of the way, or take her the rest of the way. I hope I got it correct with my hands here. I think you understand what I'm trying to say. So give your best, Casey, in spiritual practice. And the rest is up to the personality or the being whom you invoke through your practices. It is quite, I have the simple slogan, I give my best, let Krishna do the rest. This is a very simple formula. Thank you for your two very excellent questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We invite Lisa.
Hi, Satyananda. My name is Lisa, and such just deeply, deeply grateful for sharing your spiritual experiences. To kind of borrow your words, I feel like being part of remembering who we are has planted seeds in my heart, and these sessions with you are key in cultivating those and in understanding that. So I like your slogan there too, and I've written it down. But my question is, and it just comes from a genuine place of curiosity, as someone who, such as yourself, who really fully inhabits the soul, but yet are walking through this world, you know, in a human body and with the human experience, and, you know, comes from a place of curiosity as I'm on in the early stages of walking a path myself, of, is it possible, as you're fully inhabiting the soul, to 100% quiet your ego? Or is there moments in your day-to-day experience where the ego still sneaks in? And then if so, in which ways? And that's my question of curiosity.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for this very important query. As long as we have this material body and this material mind, we will experience happiness and distress. It will come to us. And so will we experience the ego. It's an element which is with us. It helps us when we wake up in the morning to know I'm Lisa and I have to go now and take care of such and such. And again, next morning, wake up and go into this identity, so to say, or identification. That's a function of the ego. So it will be there, and sometimes it will be painfully there. You will feel hurt by someone. You will not feel recognized, maybe. So this will continue. However, and please, every one of you, listen now very carefully, this is very important. By your spiritual practice, you are able to observe that. And therefore, your reaction will be different. You will not buy into everything which your ego tells you. You will actually be able to understand, here, the ego is lying. Here the ego is hurt. Here the this pattern, this mechanism is happening. And you can distance yourself from it. You will not be overwhelmed by it. You will watch the ego working perhaps like a monkey, which when you go to India, the monkeys are impossible beings. They are. This morning I just thought about this one monkey. I had planted a tree, a beautiful small tree. Oh, it was a sacred tree, a kadamba tree. And then this monkey came and he brutally ate the young sapling up and no more kadamba tree. I was thinking really, I felt so, why have you destroyed my kadamba tree? I could see this, observe what was going on without, and then I could quickly detach myself from it. I think one of the greatest gift of genuine spiritual practice, Lisa, is that you can make some distance and enter into what is called in Sanskrit the Shakshitvena role. It means the role of the neutral observer and not become overwhelmed by it. In other words, as a spiritual person, it might happen that you walk through your hometown and you want to cross the street and someone who's really inconsiderate drives and speeds up and you have to jump back on the walkway, otherwise he would hit you and you would feel a moment of protest. You insensitive driver, you are on a slow boat to China. This is so your spiritual progress will be very slow. I guess in New York we say other things to the driver. You insensitive brute, we may say and feel. But moments later you say, oh, come on, you are now getting into your caveman mood, you know, or cave lady mode, and you can take yourself back again. Same thing happens. I was a little while ago, I was in an emotionally very intense moment. I had come to the deathbed of my dying mother, and my dying mother implored me. She was in real pain, really excruciating pain. And she had implored me, can you do something for me? Can you help me? You are my spiritual son. I was for a moment emotionally, quite overwhelmed. He is the woman who gave me life, who nourished me with her own breast by breastfeeding me, who tolerated my wild escapades as a young boy, and so on. And he's imploring me to help her overcome the troubles of dying, which is... But immediately I applied this. I took a step back. I went into the observer mode where I saw my mother on the deathbed moving in excruciating pain and me standing before, and I immediately focused myself, concentrated myself and said the mantras which I know should be said. I said the prayers. I internally sang these hymns which I know. She's a Christian, so I did not want to say all this loud because she is very very good believer in Christianity, but I'm not so expert in what is done in that tradition, so I did it in my tradition inside, and I saw how she was calming down and fell asleep, so the pain went down by this. It would not have been possible for me to do this if I would have remained overwhelmed and panicked myself. But I spiritual practice gives you the chance to step back and come into what is philosophically called the neutral observer role, where you are not overwhelmed with feelings of happiness and distress or pain and whatever is coming. So yes, I sometimes see my ego is acting, but I have learned to step back, and then I can see what it is doing, and I do not, I can stop myself in following along, because I'm not identified any longer. Lisa, this is such a gift, to be able to step back. There wouldn't be any wars. There wouldn't be so many mistakes. There would not be any pain if we could just step back and don't react. Don't be pulled. And if we are not allowing ourselves to be pulled into this. Thank you. Wonderful question again. Thank you.
Deeply thank you. So wonderful and so instructive. I appreciate it.
We have time for one last question. Peter, would you please ask?
Peter, you're on mute. Sorry.
It was an honor and a privilege to hear you again today. Thank you so much. I always get shivers when I listen to you speak. I'm curious, how did you know where Srila Prabhupada was? Like, you know, you were 16, like, where did you get the money? How did you eat? How did you survive, you know, living underneath the hull of a ship for how many days it took to get to London? How did you know he was going to be at the airport? I mean, how did you get all these points of information? How did they come to you?
Thank you, Peter. Yes, well, I lived in the German harbor town Hamburg, which is in North Germany, and there was a temple, and I had inquired when it would be possible and where it would be possible for me to meet the founder of this great movement which brought the Vedic culture to the West. And I was supplied with all the informations, the times and the address in London. This was an ashram in London. And although I did not pay my fare, I was asking my affluent family to give a big amount of money for the residents of the ashram in Hamburg to go and take a ticket. So my father, my late father, gave transportation for the whole ashram. I believe it was something like 50 people or maybe 45, something like that, and return ticket. And yes, so then I went. It was, the distance is minimal, Peter. It is not like these long sea voyage. It's one day only. And I took some bread with me and ate it in the darkness. But it was only one, maybe 16 hours or so, but not more. So then in London, I went to the temple there, to the ashram there, and they had all the flight details. But you might have another thing in your mind asking this question. how does all this happen? You know, how do you, does a living being meet their teacher? And I can only come back to that first text which I read to all of you. It is by the arrangement of God that you are brought together with the teacher. The teacher, if he is a genuine teacher, then shows you a way, a practice, and so on, so that you can meet the Lord. I believe very strongly that there are always two levels, the material level and the spiritual level. The material level, I told you, I got the information from this ashram. I got the times and the place where he would come, you know, at the airport, from that ashram and so on. But I really feel that behind these material arrangements, there are other arrangements. And I think many times all of us have seen this in our lives. There are things which happen, and they don't happen by chance. They seem to be orchestrated. There seems to be a master plan combining all these events together and putting them up like pearls on a string, so to say, so that they are in one line. And the one who is the supreme arranger behind all other arrangements, that is this divine supreme being, the source of all sources and so on. So if we want spiritual experiences, let us not look on one level for them, the material arrangements. Let us ask for help and for the eyes to see, and then they will be granted to us. Thank you, Peter. I remember seeing you. If possible, please, all of you on the call, let us remember our host's gracious invitations. Let us meet in New York in a few weeks, and maybe, Hari Prasad, we can rent the venue in such a way that afterwards we don't have to leave immediately, but there's ample time to stay there and exchange views and exchange ideas and talk personally.
Absolutely. Yes, we will definitely do that. That's important to us. Thank you. Wonderful. So, Satchinandana Swami, did you want to close us out?
Yes, but it's a new English word. I will close you out now. Is that proper English? Can we say like this? In New York, we can say. Yes. This is my first appearance in the Zoom world again. But yesterday I had a short program, which was more a meeting with a friend, actually. But this is the first thing after I was 10 days on an Ayurvedic treatment. And this Ayurvedic treatment is was quite interesting. What they do over the period of the first 5 days is they bring all the toxins into the intestinal tract, and then after the first 5 days they have a very disciplined regimen that helps you to expel all the toxins which have accumulated in various tracts. One is the intestinal tracts, where the intestines are, and afterwards your body feels really very, very young. You feel very light because all these blockages in the nervous systems and the blockages to digestion and so on have gone. But even more important than that is it in an Ayurvedic treatment to bring out the mental toxins. They are not just physical toxins, they are mental toxins, blockades, so that our thought cannot move in the subtle spiritual realm and so on. And I really feel by these sessions which we have here on the Zoom in the Upbuild community, I see it as my role to help you to detoxify from, let us say, all the blockages that have happened in your in the life, the mental blockages which keep us from genuine spiritual experiences. Just when you're physically blocked, you can't digest very well, you can't sleep even, and so many functions of the organs don't work. So it's also when you are mentally blocked or spiritually blocked, then you are not able really to have these good spiritual experiences which are really available for everyone. What is very important for me to say at the very end is an answer I gave to, I believe, Casey in the beginning, is that genuine spiritual practice says, make you sensitive enough so that you can actually have everywhere spiritual experiences every day. I wish you the same, because I know they will convince you, they will build up your faith, and they will give you spiritual strength. So detoxify physically and mentally. The detoxification mentally happens by spiritual practice. These are my words in parting. I consider it a great honor to spend time with all of you, and I'm very delighted in these sessions. Thank you so very much. Good, these are my parting words. Then over to you, Hari Prasad. I will just look at the who is still here with us. Oh wow, that's always a good part, not to see, Fatsi, you are even there again. I remember last time. Brahma Tirtha Prabhu, I can't believe my eyes. Wonderful. Vijay, Tia is there. Natalia is there. Wonderful. Josh is also there. You are in two separate computers, isn't it? Your wife is in one and you are in the other. Lisa is there. Adina is there. Sonal, yes. Sonal, you came. Did you come to the Eastern Retreat? Is it you or that's a different Sonal? Good. Greta is there. Anna, Adina, Valentina. David Charles Wilson, wow, David, you look ready to go on stage. And Susan Weiser Mason, wonderful. Wow, I don't think I can see everyone. It's so, let's try to meet in person. That would be very nice. I will bring special cookies from Germany for all of you. Good. So then see you all if you can make it. Hope I can imagine not all of you can make it, but see as many as of you to next Wednesday in the same place in the computer. Thank you very much. I'm saying goodbye to all of you.
Deepest gratitude for you, Satchinandana Swami, and for everyone present here. We thank you so much. See you next week.